Hello, I'm Craig Price, and you are listening to the Find Your Best Voice podcast. Thank you for joining me. I love podcasts. I'm constantly listening to podcasts. As someone who enjoys creating content on the internet, it became increasingly obvious to me that a great way to communicate with people online would be a podcast. I've been sitting on the sidelines for a little while now, trying to figure out how I wanted to make that happen. I didn't want to just create a podcast for the sake of creating a podcast. I wanted to make something that was a true and honest reflection of myself that I could share with the world. I love teaching voice, but creating a podcast where I sit and talk about vocal technique didn't feel like the right option for me. There are other creators in that space doing an amazing job already. But I have always been inspired by the stories of others, how their careers and lives have taken shape, and what inspires and motivates them. I also have an incredible number of friends and colleagues who are constantly working on new and exciting projects. I can't think of a better way to use this platform than to help bring those projects and stories to others in hopes that they might inspire you the way they have inspired me. I'm already enjoying these conversations, and I hope you will too. Today, on our very first episode, I interviewed a dear friend, singer, mom, and children's book author, April Boyette. April talks to us about her childhood, her training as a singer, her life as a mom, and how it inspired her to start a series of children's books about a little girl who loves the performing arts. Let's jump into the conversation now. April, I am so excited to have you on my podcast. One thing that I loved when I was reading the Geneva books, which we'll talk about a little more later, but on the back of the first book, it says, "This leading lady teaches us to dream big while remaining kind and down to earth." And that's part of my vision for this podcast, is just to kind of take people's stories, people that inspire me and friends of mine, and let them tell their stories so they can inspire other people. So when I read that, I thought this is perfect way to start this podcast, because this is exactly what I'm hoping to do with this. So
awesome. That sounds great.
Yeah. So can you tell me just how you got started with singing and maybe what your earliest memory of singing is?
Well, what I remember as my earliest memory is children's church choir in Buena Vista, Georgia. We did a musical called, I looked it up, Amazing Grace. And it was a kid's musical, but it had this like adult woman singing as Grace. And so that was, I think I was 4 or 5 maybe. And that just left this lasting impression, and I could probably still sing a few of the songs if I thought really hard about it. But I mean, mainly I think, yeah, church choir, like little kid church choir a little bit, in a small Southern town was where I have my earliest memories and sort of started singing a little bit.
So, yeah. That's kind of like my story too. I feel like I started around the same age, the same way. So that's awesome.
Right.
Is there somebody that inspired you and kind of encouraged you to sing early on?
I would say my parents always encouraged me, throughout the whole thing. I mean, especially later on, once I figured out that's the route I wanted to take. But, early on as a little kid, I remember my aunt being sort of the singer of the family, my mom's sister, Aunt Salita. So she had a soprano voice and she sang high and louder than, you know, everybody at church. And so, she had a pretty voice and so I just sort of remember, you know, her being like the pinnacle of singing at a young age. So I would say she sort of inspired some of that, you know, learning how to sing and wanting to sing high and loud like that.
Yeah.
Family,
I think family members all the time are like what we kind of inspire us.
Right.
When we started with singing, if you have an older adult in your family that sings, it, you know, it leads people to sing.
Right. Yeah. My mom would play the piano. Like they did it their childhood and then into my childhood. My mom played the piano and sang the alto parts and the harmony, and my aunt sang soprano. So that was kind of their thing.
It's amazing, the Von Trapp. You could have gone
anywhere. We did a little recording a couple years ago just for fun, you know, and did some hymns and harmonized. Oh, awesome. So that's cool. Yeah.
Do you know, do you remember, was there a moment that you knew you had like a really, a special talent for singing, something beyond just like everyone else?
I was thinking back about that, and maybe I was thinking probably in when I started voice lessons in around eighth grade, I started voice lessons. And I think kind of that first recital or two, probably the, probably not the winter recital, maybe by spring recital when I had a minute to learn some things. I think I sort of had that feeling of that people seemed to notice when I was singing a little bit. So, gave me that, you know, that first impression of feeling like, oh, maybe I'm okay at this. So yeah, that's sort of what I was, what I've thought would be probably the earliest of when I remember figuring that out.
And was that first voice teacher Miss Mapes?
That teacher was not Miss Mapes. The first teacher I had was Cindy Hewitt in Florence, South Carolina. And she was great, you know, as a early teacher and a first time teacher. And then I switched to Miss Mapes later in high school. So
that's amazing. There's so many good singers that have come out of Florence.
Yes. Yeah. We had
some really serious singers now, like singing in opera today that came out of Florence too.
It's, oh, right. Yeah.
There's all the time. I see more and more singers from Florence. So.
Oh, right. Greg Gebaley was from there. And then, Alex Elliott, Birch Elliott.
He's doing
I don't know which name he goes by. Alex Elliott. So he was singing at the Met last year, I think.
I know. I sang in Florence a few years ago with the Florence Masterworks Choir. I did the Messiah there with them. And everybody was like telling me about him. I didn't even know who he was at the time. And now I'm seeing his name everywhere. So that's really great. So you studied in high school. When did it kind of become a more serious part of your life? When did you kind of decide like, hey, maybe this is what I want to continue to study?
I mean, throughout high school, I started in show choir back before Glee was cool.
Holler show choir.
Right, holler show choir. I loved it. So I feel like show choir and music, like choir in general, were kind of my life through most of high school. And then I started giving up summers for it. Like I went to the Governor's School for the Arts in South Carolina. And then my senior year summer, I did North Carolina School of the Arts program. So I think, you know, once I started kind of, that was all I was doing, was when I realized that it was my thing. And I didn't really, I mean, you know, I liked other things in school. All right. But the theater and the music was just all I wanted to do at that point. So I think that's when I realized I might go into it a little more seriously.
That's amazing. My sister went to like show choir camps, like away to show choir camps. I always did show choir, but I was never like as involved.
Was it the one at Duke?
I think so. Yeah.
Because Brightleaf. I went.
When I graduated, she actually became like a captain or something. And she was like, because she was a dancer also. So she like helped choreograph things and she went to show choir camp to like learn things over the summer. And
That was my life. I love that stuff. I only did one summer at Brightleaf, but I know what you're talking about. Like the elite of the elite
I know. If only Glee had come around sooner, maybe we would have been superstars on Glee.
Exactly. I know. When it came out, I was like, yes, I understand this. This is my life. This was my life.
So you went on to study and get degrees in voice, right? Where did you end up studying?
I went to the University of North Carolina at Greensboro, UNCG, and did all 4 years there and went straight into music. There was no question. There were no second, you know, changing majors. And then I moved to New York immediately after graduating and started musical theater school at AMDA, and did 2 semesters there and then took a year where I just worked and took voice lessons. And then through some coaches I had met while working and taking voice lessons with Ashley Putnam, I went to Manhattan School of Music. So they all encouraged me toward Manhattan School of Music up on 122nd Street. And they sent me that way. So I ended up at get my master's at Manhattan School of Music, where I met you.
Which is perfect. That's where we met. Yes.
Yes.
So even though we're both from South Carolina, we didn't know each other until we ended up both at Manhattan School at the same time.
Right. Right.
I love Manhattan School of Music. I still think about it all the time.
Yeah.
And I miss it. I miss it. It was a great place.
It was, yeah.
So this is something I talk to students about a lot when I'm speaking to students, which is, you know, and I know you'll relate to this. When we're young and we're studying, we have this like idea of like what our career will be, whether we think we'll be the next Renee Fleming or we think we're going to go to AMDA and be winning a Tony 3 years later or, or, you know, whatever those are. And that's almost never our path. And even, you know, I've been very fortunate to have decent success in singing and teaching career. And I kind of always knew from a young age that I wanted to like teach at the college level. And now I'm here and doing that. But if you had asked me like how I would have gotten to where I am now from where I started, I never would have guessed like the path that I've taken. So did you have some sort of like idea of what your career would have looked like? And how has that kind of evolved over time?
Early on, it was all about musical theater. So I think in middle school or maybe early high school, I saw a production of Les Mis in Charleston and it changed my life. You know, it was one of those, like, I have to do that. So theater and music was more of the dream originally, was the Broadway dream. Then once I went up to New York, in college and undergrad, I did classical music. I mean, I didn't do musical theater or theater. So I did more voice performance and classical music. And then when I went up to New York, AMDA was fun and I met some awesome people who I'm still friends with. But it wasn't quite what I was wanting to do or looking for, I don't think. And so then it became more about the opera because I started babysitting for Joseph Volpe, the general manager at the Met, which you know about a little bit. But I worked for his family and got to see all of these operas at the Met for free. And it was amazing. And I was like, well, I'm more classical and I sing a little bit more like that. So I sort of turned a little bit toward the classical opera side, and then I think the career of choice then became like Renee Fleming's, I want to be like her. I want to be Renee Fleming and have that career. So, you know, it even just getting on the path changed from more of Broadway and musical theater to classical and opera. And then that path was windy as well, you know. And then later on, when I was doing like young artist programs, I learned more about Sandra Rodvanovsky and I thought of Lise Lindstrom, who I met doing a program, and they had more of the slower careers. I feel like they didn't skyrocket to fame immediately, but you know, they have these amazing long lasting voices and careers. So I think who I was looking at and what I was wanting to do sort of evolved over time, as it does.
Yes. And while we're speaking of like the Met and your connection there, which was so wonderful because of your connection, we together shared so many nights at the opera, which were so fabulous. Can we talk about when we discovered Sandra Rodvanovsky? I feel like I always think like we discovered her because
we
like,
did.
We kind of had no idea who she was until we went to this performance. And then it was one of the most, still to this day, I've seen so many operas, so many places, and so many wonderful singers. And it's still, to me, one of my most, like, favorite memories, seeing an opera.
Yes, yes. What did she sing? Like a high E flat to, like, a low something crazy?
I mean,
and we just looked at each other like,
this
what?
This was I Vespri Siciliani.
Yes.
Which is not a short opera.
No.
It was quite a long evening and quite a big sing for her. And, you know, when she first came out and started singing, we were blown away. And then it's just like it got more ridiculous and more amazing as the night went on. I mean, and I love her now and I've seen her. I've watched so many of the HD transmissions with her and, you know, I've got to go see her again. So
Yes.
You know, but I follow her, and you know, she did a Tosca in Spain, I think in Madrid recently.
Mm-hmm.
And she did Abyss. She sang the aria twice. And I watched the video. I'll have to send you the video on YouTube.
It is
unbelievable. It is unbelievable. Yeah. Yeah. So that's, I don't know. That's,
yeah, I love it.
That's still like a moment of inspiration for me. So is there like one kind of singer or person or figure that has kind of been an inspiration to you?
I would say probably like overarching was Renee Fleming throughout, you know, most of that time. She just always seemed to kind of have it together, which, you know, she might say she didn't, but who knows, but it just seemed like, you know, the voice was always there and she was technical and doing all the right things and making it beautiful sounds, you know? So I think, you know, of a current singer at the time that we were going through school, she was one that I was always sort of looking at.
And we're going to get to Geneva in a little bit. But when I was reading Geneva, the Diva Goes to the Opera, I said, oh, my gosh. Because I remember a night where we saw Renee Fleming at the Met. And then we went to Cafe Fiorella across the street. And Renee Fleming came over to have dinner.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So there's that moment in Geneva Goes to the Opera where she talks about going out to eat afterwards and seeing some of the singers or something.
Right. Like,
this is totally an experience that we've had.
Yes, exactly.
So did you have any kind of favorite onstage moments from kind of performing in opera?
One of my favorites was, Madame Lidoine in Dialogues of the Carmelites. And that was in school still. That was at Manhattan School. But I remember sort of taking on like a maternal feeling with that because I mean, she is, you know, the mother. But like, you know, in the opera, everyone's getting their head cut off. So at the end, and I remember like feeling, you know, with all the other nun singers that, you know, I did feel this real maternal feeling singing that. And it's an amazing piece of music. I mean, the parts that character gets to sing are just amazing.
opera. Yeah.
It is. Yeah. So anytime I see, you know, that it's going to be on the HD or somewhere else, I'm like, let me see if I can watch it, you know? And it's, you know, another long overall opera, but those parts of that opera are amazing. So that was one of my favorites of, you know, getting to sing that. And then in Sarasota, I got to do some of the Traviata scenes. I didn't get to do the whole character, but that was, I love Traviata so much.
To me, it can do I did a presentation at a camp this summer called The Five Operas You Must Know, and that was my Verdi opera.
Yay!
And Rigoletto was I did an honorable mention for each kind of category that I did. So Verdi opera was one of my categories, and Traviata is just, to me, is one of my all-time favorite operas, and I just think it's
amazing.
So brilliant. I love so much Verdi, but Traviata is still one of my favorites. So, so you know, this can be like a life thing, or this can be a singing related thing, especially when you were doing a lot of auditions and really pursuing the singing. Is there something that kind of you did that drove you in those moments where it was like really difficult?
Probably. I think at that time, I think I kind of have this like eternal optimism a little bit, just like a seed of it. You know, it's not always like I'm super excited or happy or whatever, but I think there's always this sort of like underlying, it's going to be okay. You know? And there were a lot of, especially I think after grad school, there was like a whole year of just like no's and the postcards where they're like, thanks but no thanks. And so I think it's just that like, well, you know, I'll just keep at it. And, you know, just having that little sliver of it'll work out or it'll be okay. You know, something's going to work out in some way. So I think I just kind of do that. I mean, I would say now as an older, more mature person with kids, my kids kind of motivate me in terms of that stuff, but keeping going. But back then, yeah, it was more just having a little bit of optimism and a lot of hope. I think that helped me then.
I just had like a total flashback when you said postcards, because I've just been so long, because we get all our rejections now via emails. So I had forgotten that, like, I used to get rejections on literal postcards. I guess it was because opera companies could send that cheaper than like a letter.
Right. I remember getting that and like people talking about it at the time, because it was like, you know, you're used to the rejection letter in an envelope, but that was like the most offensive, because like everybody in the looking at your mail could see it. So I think that was like, you know, a real hit.
That's so horrible. That like, I can't, that's so funny.
Right.
I guess I blocked that out of my.
Probably.
Do you find, you know, you mentioned kids, and I'll let you talk about that a little more, how that kind of has changed your path too, but do you find that the kids kind of soften like moments of rejection or difficult moments too, because they just like add another element to your life? So like, I don't know. I know, like, I follow athletes a lot who have children. You know, I love Serena Williams, and she talks about that a lot. She's not had quite the success since she came back from having a child as she had before, although she still has like brilliant success all the time. But she speaks about how it's easier, I guess, because she has another human she's responsible for when she leaves and goes home. You know, she can't just kind of sit and sulk in her disappointment, because, you know, life goes on, because it's the perspective, I guess. Do you find that to be true too?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. What's that?
Oh, I just said,
Yeah, I do. I think it, you know, it does put it all into perspective a little bit, or the other thing is you just don't have the time or the bandwidth to say, to like worry about it, or like you said, wallow in it kind of. Yeah, it does get some perspective where it's like, well, there are other things going on in the world or in my life. And, you know, it's okay that somebody didn't like me or it didn't go my way. And, you know, you moving on kind of thing, because you do have to, because then somebody needs you 5 minutes later at this age, the age of my kids. Right. So, you know, you don't really get the time to just be sad about it or wallow. So yeah, definitely. I would agree with that.
So how is singing a part of your life now?
How is it? Is that what you said? Yeah. it's pretty on the outskirts these days. So I have more of a quote unquote day job. I'm an advisor at a university, which I love being in the university setting. So it's been, and then plus the two kids, and I think if I were, and two kids, you know, I think if I had been more, you know, still really hardcore pursuing singing when the kids came along, then obviously they would just kind of fit into that. But at the time I wasn't as much anymore. So, in the last couple of years I did, some singing with the Pensacola Opera and the Pensacola Little Theater, and they came along, and now I'm like, well, how much time is it going to take? So it's more just little gigs here and there when I can, if they don't take, you know, months of my life. And then recently a friend of mine did like a cabaret party at her house. And so she and I decided that we should make that like a monthly or every other month type of thing, where you just, you know, and it, like, stand around the piano and sing with a well trained pianist. Cause I feel like we used to do that back to the high school stuff in college and high school. We would do that all the time. Like, that's how we spent the weekend, was like standing around the piano singing. So, just to kind of get back to that stuff for fun as well is something that I want to do, just where I'm back singing some.
Yeah. You know, and you never know too. You know, I know you're so busy, but just doing those cabarets for fun may end up like opening other doors for you just to do some fun performances.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Or if you guys do it enough, like, you may stage your own cabaret because you want to share what you're doing with other people. So that's really great. I love that.
Yeah. And I think that's part of it too, is I used to think it was like this black and white kind of, you can either be professional or not, and you can either do this or that. And I've realized over the years that it's, you know, you can make your own path. You can, you know, make a podcast. podcast or do all the things. And, you know, you can do anything that you want and sort of do it your way. And then, like you said, you never know what'll come of that or who'll listen to it or where you'll end up, you know?
And I think, you know, just from people that I've heard speak or people that I've talked to, that's like sometimes when you have your most success is when you kind of give up some idea of what it should look like and just kind of follow your, I mean, this is cheesy, but like follow your bliss and kind of follow what you enjoy. And then the opportunities sometimes just kind of spring up out of that. You know, and like you said, you never know what your path is going to be and kind of how that will be shaped. So, you know, I think it's important for just to, and not to lose the, I think it's easy when you get so singularly focused to kind of lose a little bit of the joy, which is like the reason we got into singing in the first place. So,
right.
You know, I feel the same way. Like I feel fortunate to kind of cobbled together like different things to kind of create my artistic life. And I think that's
and you've really done a good job of that from what I can see. Thanks. You know, it seems like you've kept at it over the years, but you've also, you know, put different pieces together and they all seem to be working for you. So congrats.
So we kind of alluded to Geneva a couple times, but I guess the listeners probably don't know who we're talking about.
Who's that?
Inspired you to become a published children's book author. Is that, first of all, is that something you ever would have imagined for yourself?
No, not back in the days that we were talking about. in the early years, in the college years, in the New York years, no, I never would have really pictured it then. But, you know, in the last probably 10 or so years, it's changed a lot. And I've like, oh, I like to write and I like, you know, any creative outlet I can find sort of thing. But no, I did not picture that as anything early on when I was picturing careers and goals and things. No.
And so how did this come about? How did it develop? How did you get from, you know, not even having the idea that it would be in your future to now we have two books here.
Right. Yeah. So the name, the character name came from an idea my dad had. This was years ago. I saw this. He had written like a little story about a character named Geneva the Diva. It was just on a little notepad. And but I think, you know, he told me it was more or less loosely based on me, a girl who liked to sing and dance, you know? And then back around 2013, I was working an admin job and sitting through like a really boring meeting. I started writing out Geneva the Diva, you know, she was very good. She listened to her parents and I started rhyming it. And so I was just sitting there because it was, you know, an easy task to do while you're in a meeting where nobody, you know, you're not messing up the meeting. So I just sort of started rhyming, you know, lines of it and I wrote it out. And then I wrote the course of a couple meetings. I think I wrote out that one and then one about going to the ballet and the opera. So I thought, oh, this would be cool if I could ever make a book out of it. But my problem sometimes is that I have an idea. I like to be creative. And then it seems like it's going to be difficult. So I kind of stall out. I'm like, I don't know the next step. So I'm out, you know, or I'll take a break from it for a while. So I kind of always kept that, you know, little journal or where I've written it. And I had, you know, tried my hand at drawing a picture or two, which I'm not an artist in that way. So I had this little girl envisioned with pigtails and that was kind of, you know, as far as I got. And then my daughter, first daughter came along in 2017. And at that point we were, you know, getting, or 2017, 2018, we were getting to a better place like financially. So, we decided to like go ahead and pay for someone to illustrate it. So, my friend Tammy Boyce had done her own book too. The way I had seen on her social media that she did a book through Amazon. And so I reached out to her about it and, you know, she was really, really helpful in, knowing the process through Amazon to self-publish, because she had done it. And so she's also good. She can make it, you know, form correctly. And she knows all those things that I don't know. so that was really helpful to have someone who had done it before and knew what they were doing.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, like how you got from your idea to that. So it sounds like Tammy was really big help there.
Yes, she was definitely helpful in that part of it. And she's really good. I mean, you know, I knew her from back when, but I mean, that's sort of part of her business too now, I think, is really, if you want to illustrate a book, she can really help you do that.
And the so at the time, shout out to Tammy, are beautiful. They are gorgeous. So
yes. Thank you, Tammy. They are amazing. Yeah. And she's easy to work with and great. So, so she made that process a lot easier. And then I was like, okay, I wrote the words, but I didn't, you know, she did all the rest. but yeah, you can, you know, it's pretty easy once you know all that stuff to self-publish on Amazon. And there's still a lot of it that I don't know. But you know, that's been kind of a learning curve too. Like I mentioned, it's maybe, you know, one of them's on Barnes and Noble and I'm trying to get the other one on there, but I have to remind myself that whole process and how to, right. how to do it. You know, it's a lot of computer stuff and uploading. So it's not out of the realm of possibility for people, but yeah. Yeah. So that's how it got. That was a long journey, but
yeah, no, that's great. That's so exciting.
Yeah.
So what's the most interesting feedback that you've gotten about the Geneva, the Diva book?
Well, I've, you know, read the reviews on Amazon.
is that torture or is that fun?
So far it's been fun, but you know, as we get more readers, I don't know. It could be scary. Somebody wrote that they appreciated that it was a short enough book for bedtime, that it didn't go on and on. So I thought that was nice feedback, that you know, it's quick, it's easy, I can read it to my kid at night, but it's not like this long story that you have to read.
It is. I was thinking so, when I was reading through them last night again, I was like, these are really like perfect bedtime stories, like they're short and sweet, but right. have a nice moral and have kind of this arc. So yeah, I think they're perfect for that. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. And the second one we included her going to bed. So we were like, okay, this could be a good one for parents to be like, good night, time for bed.
Yeah.
So
what's next for Geneva?
Geneva. On my computer, I have a rough outline that I'm working on, but it's slow going as usual. But I want to do a coloring book next, which I kind of came up with that idea when we were doing sketches for this book, the second book, because I printed out a couple of the black and white pages and gave them to my daughter to color. And then I was like, oh, a coloring book, that's pretty easy. Tammy and I are going to work on a coloring book. She gave me parameters to work on for that. and then I think probably the ballet one was the other one I had pre-written. Geneva Goes to the Ballet. And then I've started sort of outlining other adventures she could have and like, you know, where she would go or what she would do. So hopefully in the next couple of years, we can do a few more. I mean, we did the first one 2018 and then this one 2021. So maybe they can come a little more frequent than that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. That's amazing. I was thinking too, it was like, as her story develops and as this whole universe develops, keep writing books too, like Geneva would be like such a good children's opera one day.
I thought of that. Yes. So yeah, now I need to collaborate with somebody else for that.
That's right.
Right. But yeah, that was a thought I had at one point. Cause I approached the opera in town about, you know, the story, the books and, you know, maybe collaborating to do something. And then I thought, oh, a children's opera maybe one day. Cause she's a little singer dancer girl. Why not?
That would be, you know, that would, talking about the opera company too, that would be great to collaborate with them on just like a children's story hour or something. You know, they're always,
right.
You know, especially as things kind of get hopefully better after this pandemic, you know,
right.
to kind of bring people into the opera houses again. Like that seems like that'd be something that's really, really great.
That's true.
So, I mean, you talked about several more books and a coloring book. Do you have a big goal for what you want to do next, just in life or with Geneva or?
I mean, well, you and I used to, you know, do our vision boards. So, you know,
I still do.
And you're going to be the next Oprah.
Board, actually.
What's that?
You have one? I just recently made a new vision board.
Actually. Oh, good. Maybe I should work on mine.
I need something to be hopeful about in the midst of all this like COVID.
Yeah. Good idea. I mean, like you know, my crazy pipe dream idea was that Disney's going to call me one day when, you know, it really blows up. But, but you know, in the meantime, I probably need to do some marketing to get it there. But, so I'm just trying to, in terms of the book, you know, work on marketing it and getting the word out a little bit, which thank you for asking me on your podcast, because that definitely helps with things like that. So yeah, just trying to get the word out, telling people when I can, going around town to, you know, promote the book and see who wants to sell it and that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, I would, you know, in terms of the writing, I do enjoy the writing, and I've had other ideas for like kids books that aren't necessarily Geneva, or I just try to jot down all the ideas, and when I get to them, then hopefully they'll still be good.
You know, I think that's the best thing. I have like several spiral notebooks where I'm just always making notes about things, or if I come up with a quote that inspires me, I'll write it down, or if I have an idea, I'll write it down. And sometimes like those ideas like make it to something that I try to do. And sometimes those ideas become like develop into other ideas. Something I try to do. Sometimes I try things and they work. Sometimes I try things and they don't. I think that's kind of part of, you know, part of, I was reading something about Kobe Bryant recently, and like he has like one of the highest numbers of shots missed in the NBA. But like, you think of him as like one of the greatest of all time, but you know, to be the greatest, one of the greatest of all time, and to make all the shots that he's made, he had to take a lot of shots that he probably missed. Right. So I thought,
That's a good point.
It's such an inspirational kind of thing to think about.
Right. Definitely. Yeah. So yeah, I don't, you know, I want to do more writing and all the things, but, just creative stuff, you know, whenever I can, and, try to, and I mean, Geneva is a good, point of writing it down and keeping an idea, because I just sort of had that idea this whole time. And I had that notebook the whole time for several years now, since I've lived in Pensacola. And then it was like, oh, okay, I think I'll finally do something with it. So, you know, to see it come to fruition was really exciting too, that it had always been this idea in a notebook, and now it's tangible, you know, I can see it.
All right, so I've got a lightning round questions for you. So short answers are great. You know,
what's that?
Whatever, shorter answers are great. Whatever comes to mind.
Okay.
So my first question is, who's your favorite singer? Any genre?
Favorite singer? Montserrat Caballé.
Yes, Montserrat Caballé.
Yes, love her.
Favorite musical or opera?
Traviata. And Les Miserables, if we're doing musical.
Oh, Les Mis, yes.
Yeah.
This is one of my favorite questions. If you could have dinner with three people, dead or alive, who would they be?
Okay. So let's see. My brother is one of them. He passed away several years ago, so I would definitely see him. Jimmy Buffett is another one. And I think Patrick Mahomes.
Oh, wow.
Because we're big Kansas City Chiefs fans around here, so that would be fun.
That's great. I love that. One book that has been informative for your life.
The Artist Way. Have you done that one?
No, I don't know that.
Oh, you love it. Julie Cameron, I think, wrote it. And there's like a workbook that goes with it. So like if you're ever feeling a little stalled out creatively, it's very inspirational to kind of get you going again. So The Artist Way, it's a good one.
Right. I'm gonna have to check that out now.
Yeah.
One piece of advice that current day April would have given to a younger version of yourself, and at what age would you go back to give the advice?
Okay. I think 18-year-old April, when I was graduating high school, right after show choir, you know, I had a lot of drive at the time and maybe some talent, you know, and fearlessness. So I would tell 18-year-old April not to be anti-school and university life, but I would tell her to go straight to New York and not look back, because I think going to college, while it was fun and I loved it all and it was, you know, I had a social life, that I think slowed me down in terms of like career, where And like getting older and like, you know, not being as fearless anymore. I think I was young and dumb enough to just go up there and just go for it, you know? So I would say go for it at 18.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. That's great. That's good advice, because, you know, you're right. Like as we get older, as we get more responsibilities, as we get like a greater perspective on life, it's easy to like lose some of that fear.
Right.
Kind of quality yeah. that we have when we're that age. That's great. Mm-hmm. All right. So this is another favorite question of mine. 5 songs on your must-have playlist. And it can be any genre, any artist, any style.
Okay. So I think I came up for... Okay, I got to use my cheat sheet for this one.
Sure.
Okay. So it's a lot of weird genres, I guess. Addio del Passato from Traviata.
Yeah.
This one. Grow As We Go by Ben Platt. You know that one?
Yeah, that's good. I love that.
Yeah, I love me some Ben Platt. Okay. The finale from In the Heights. Love that song.
Oh yeah.
And then American Pie, because that's a classic. And then I think Always Remember Us This Way from The Star Is Born, the Lady Gaga version.
Oh, yeah. I watched that.
Number 17.
I had never seen it. It was such a good movie.
It's good. Yeah.
It was unbelievable. I can't.
I know. And Bradley Cooper.
My doctoral degree, I think, when that came out. And I was just so busy and overwhelmed that I never saw it. And then I watched it over the summer.
Right.
I just was blown away.
Yeah. It was great. Good stuff.
All right. So where can our listeners find out more about you and find out more about Geneva the Diva?
Okay. So Geneva the Diva has a website. I'm at least that tech savvy that I got that. So it's Geneva the Diva book .com. So Geneva the Diva book.com. And Facebook and Instagram is the same thing. It's Geneva the Diva book. So just add book to the end of it. Yeah. So Facebook and Instagram, it's on there. And then the website. And if you want to order copies, Amazon has it and Barnes & Noble. And then if anybody wants to sell it in their store or something like that, you can also email me, GenevaTheDivaBook@gmail.com for like wholesale prices and things. Like, you don't have to order it off Amazon if you want a bunch of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Great. And
do you get all that?
Yeah, that's
okay,
good. Perfect. That's so perfect. I'm so excited about this. I'm so excited that I could share more about Geneva the Diva with everybody, because I've enjoyed reading these books and buying these books for my niece.
Yes, thank you.
Her read them. And I know some of my friends have seen some of my posts about it and bought them for their little girls too. So I know it's going to inspire kids around more and more as you release even more kind of coloring books and future stories.
Thank you.
Of Geneva the Diva adventures. So
thank you
so much for joining me and being my first podcast guest. I'm so excited.
Thanks. I'm honored
for that. Yeah. Oh, the honor is mine. The honor is mine. And everybody go check out Geneva the Diva. Thank you, April.
Thanks, Craig. Good to see you. Love you.
See you. You've been listening to the Find Your Best Voice podcast. I'm the host, Craig Price. You can find more about me at my Instagram at Craig Sings. And you can find more about the podcast at our website, bestvoicepod.com, or at bestvoicepod on Instagram. See you next time.